Welcome back to Daleks Aren't Robots. I'm Josh. I'm one of the co-hosts, and here are the other co-hosts. We have Kari.
Hello.
We have Justin.
Hello.
And we have Zach.
Hi.
For those just tuning in, Zach and I are Whovians. Kari and Justin are non-Whovians, and we're exploring all of Doctor Who with them. And today we're doing kind of a weird one, as we're tackling Doctor Who, The Enemy Within, also known as Doctor Who, the TV movie. Justin, normally this is when I would ask you to do a synopsis, but before we get to that, we should probably sum up a little bit what this movie is. So basically, during what was called the Wilderness Years, the period after the Seventh Doctor's final episode, but before the Ninth Doctor's first episode, they made a TV movie that was supposed to start off a sort of American continuation of the show. That didn't work out, mostly because no one in America watched, because at the time no one in America knew what the fuck Doctor Who was.
That's not true, because I watched it when it came out.
Yeah, well, most people were more interested in the finale to Roseanne at the time. Not the series finale, it was the season finale, but John Goodman was in the hospital. People wanted to know how that was going to go, I guess. But the movie is canon.
I have no idea. You could be lying to me and I would have no idea.
He isn't.
Okay.
Justin, can you tell us what happens in this movie?
All right. So it was the Seventh Doctor?
Yep.
So the Seventh Doctor apparently somehow defeated his arch nemesis, the Master.
Not exactly, but keep going.
Somehow, or took him to trial and they disintegrated him in this trial.
Close enough.
Totally disintegrate him.
Yeah.
And he disintegrated into slime and not dust. It was a weird kind of disintegration, in my opinion. They decided to keep the remains on the TARDIS. Well thought out move with no drawbacks.
He's supposed to be transporting him to Gallifrey or whatever.
Yeah, he was transporting him, but he stops in America because the Master Slime interferes with the TARDIS.
We all know that 1990s America is between Gallifrey and Skaro.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can tell it's 1990s America because the instant the Doctor gets out, he is gunned down by a street gang of very photogenic youths.
And mostly Asian photogenic youths.
Well, yeah, it was Chinatown.
Yes. Yes, it was. In San Francisco, I think.
Yeah. Yep. He's taken to the hospital because one of the youths actually takes him to the hospital. Feels his stuff, too, but does take him to the hospital.
To be fair, he didn't have to bring him to the hospital, and he stayed with him in the back of the ambulance, too.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we know the Doctor's not from around here, so honestly, I say fair dibs to him.
So the Doctor goes to the hospital where they do some trauma surgery on him, find out, oh no, he has two hearts. While that's all happening, the paramedic that brought the Doctor to the hospital gets possessed by the Master Goo, and he's Eric Roberts.
The Master Goo snake ghost thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was goo, I would take the form of a snake. I mean, that's just me, though. That could just be me. What would be your goo?
I would be Michelle Pfeiffer. Duh.
Just made out of ghost goo.
Yeah.
I think I would go for the whatever tea it was from Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah. All right.
I stick with ghost snake.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Anyway, so he gets possessed by the Master while the Doctor gets put into surgery. I think the surgery was botched.
Well, the surgery isn't so much botched as she assumed that there weren't two hearts. So she put a probe thingy, a surgical instrument in. And of course, you can't see where you are. And the guy has two hearts. So he has aberrant anatomy. So she got lost in there and he died.
And accidentally killed him. Yeah.
Yeah. She accidentally kills him.
This is the other character in the thing, the surgeon lady.
The companion.
Grace.
Yep.
And that's one of her main character traits, is that she's a doctor and she likes opera.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's two character traits right there.
I mean, that's pretty good for a 90s TV movie.
Yeah, a woman character in a 90s TV movie.
So they declare the Doctor dead. They stick him in a freezer. He regenerates there.
Yes.
Scares the comically inept mortuary guy. Then they find out about the Master, and this sum up is taking way too long, so I'm going to... I usually say, and then it ended by now.
Yeah,
but this movie just keeps going.
I mean, this is a movie.
There's a lot in this movie.
Yeah.
Basically, what it comes down to is that the Master wants to do a thing with a magic portal that's on the TARDIS and destroy the universe. And
because reasons.
I mean, where would I don't understand that, because where would he sit?
The Master basically wanted to steal the Doctor's body.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, he wanted the Doctor's body.
There was a lot of subtext in this one, which I was okay with.
I don't even know if that qualifies as subtext. No, that's just text. You can't just go around telling people you want their body and have it be subtext. Like, that's super text, if anything.
I think when you're Eric Roberts and saying that, it's going to be viewed a certain way.
Yeah.
If you want to finish up, by all means, carry on.
No, it's, I mean, that's basically the story. That's what happened. They stop him, obviously.
Yes.
They stop him, and the TARDIS eats him.
Yeah, yeah, basically, that was pretty cool. Yeah.
Cannon eats him.
Pretty much.
The Doctor says it has indigestion afterwards.
I mean, why did they just do that in the first place? I don't know.
Good question.
Well, the Master comes back later, so clearly
it didn't
take.
There's explanations for what happened there.
The TARDIS is about as efficient as a Sarlacc. Ain't nothing staying in there.
And then it ends. In between, the Doctor kisses Grace and reveals he's half human, and the fan base loses its collective shit.
The ones that weren't watching Roseanne, apparently.
Yes.
Yeah.
All three of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it did much better in the UK.
And got better reception. People liked it a lot more in the UK.
That's actually interesting.
I liked it when it came on.
I watched it. Yeah, I remember watching it.
Yeah, that was the first Doctor Who I ever really saw.
I had seen some Doctor Who just on PBS.
Yeah.
And I never did. This really was the first.
No, this was like my first. Like, I made a conscious effort to watch it because I didn't know a lot about Doctor
Who. It was the first Doctor Who thing you saw intentionally.
Yes, usually because we had a public television station here that showed a lot of Doctor Who in a very inconsistent time slot and in no logical order. Like, it would be halfway through like a Tom Baker serial, and the next week it would be the second Doctor. I don't remember his name.
Patrick Troughton. Yeah.
Like, no explanation.
Yeah, that's about right.
I think my introduction to Doctor Who before Zach actually got me into Doctor Who was walking in on my cousin in the middle of a Fifth Doctor serial and having just no clue what was going on.
Oh, I thought that was going to end in a much more disturbing way.
Yeah, usually when you walk in on your cousin.
That could have gone in totally different direction.
This isn't that type of podcast.
That's true.
My cousin had his pants on. Everything was fine.
Whew.
Now my other cousin... No, we're not.
Your cousins don't listen.
I liked it. I did.
Yeah, I actually like this movie.
I like it, but I have notes.
I mean, it's not perfect, obviously, but no movie is. But
I'm not sure if I want to get into that now or later, though. Yeah.
Probably later.
Yeah, probably later.
But there'll be opportunities as we go.
I think, though, where we really need to start is discussion of the Doctor. Both Doctors, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah, we got two.
The Doctor is the main character. And yes. He's definitely the main character, I would say, in this. He is in fine form. He starts out as Sylvester McCoy. I think that's his name, right? Yeah.
I just want to state for the record, Sylvester McCoy, my favorite Doctor, best Doctor, come fight me.
He seems cool. I'm obviously basically totally unfamiliar with him. Yeah, he's only in this for a few minutes before he gets brutally shot to death.
Yeah, he doesn't get to be his Sylvester McCoy self in this, sadly.
Oh, yeah.
But he does do one thing that is extremely, extremely important. He has a cup of tea. It is apparently black tea, as far as I can tell, although it could be oolong. And he does take it with milk. So I have to ask, as someone who worked in a tea room for 2 whole years, is this canon the Doctor's favorite kind of tea?
I want to say that there is a short answer that we can give now and a longer answer we may dig into later, but this entire podcast could be entirely about the Doctor's tea drinking habits.
We're gonna have to do that as a special probably. At some point.
Me and Josh before this got into a whole discussion about
there was a tea debate.
Oh,
we were taking sides on tea.
Well, I will be the arbiter of the tea here, since I was a professional tea person.
Well, do we want to get into it?
But this is obviously a British origin show, even if this particular episode wasn't.
Well, yeah,
so like, kind of. What tea is obviously super important here. So he takes it with milk. What kind of tea is it? Do they vary per doctor or like?
Well, when it comes to food, drink, all that kind of stuff, that changes with every doctor.
It does. Okay.
Allergies.
I will say, based on my research, and I would like to leave it here, that was probably a black tea, not an oolong.
Well, it could have been an oolong.
It looks like one.
It could have been an oolong.
Possibly. Hard to say. May not have been from Earth. We will get to that.
That'd have been space tea.
Definitely had milk in it, though. You can
tell. It did have milk.
Or some other type of dairy. But British people don't really use cream in tea, so.
No.
Also, most likely had sugar in it.
That would account for the bubbles. Anyway, these are the very important questions I had while I was.
Maybe even lemon, but.
Possibly lemon, especially if it's seven.
You don't usually want to put lemon with milk, because if you don't do it right, it'll curdle.
Do that because they can do it right.
They can, yeah. But I wouldn't. Doesn't taste good anyway. Anyway, yes. So after the doctor dies, he regenerates into the hot doctor, apparently. Patrick McGann.
Paul McGann.
Aside from David Tennant, arguably the sexiest doctor. I want to point out, that is not me saying David Tennant is the sexiest doctor. That is Tumblr saying David
Tennant. But they didn't they didn't explicitly sell him as sexy.
No.
No, he's like a big R romantic type.
Yes.
Though. He's got the longer hair. He's wearing most of a Wild Bill Hickok costume, so it's dated. He looks like kind of like a happier and less creepy version of Lord Byron.
Yeah.
Kind of. He's sort of introvert Lord Byron.
Yeah, and I think Eccleston is cute, but I mean, this one, he's good looking, and he seems like a more of a romantic lead type to me.
Yeah, and the books and audio dramas definitely leaned into the romantic leads.
He's also way more psychic than usual.
Yeah.
And so is the master.
Yeah.
And he's somehow half human on his mother's side.
Yeah.
Which,
that's getting into production. And
all right, wait. So when I watched this the second time, I did notice that there was a part where Grace asks him if he can change species, and he says yes, but only during the regeneration. So I wondered if this was supposed to be like this specific regeneration is half human, or like
that is one of the excuses the fandom has used, and even in some of the material has used to explain the whole half-human thing. Again, a lot of that is production and stuff that went before and previous drafts.
Yeah, you can tell that there were some cuts, because
a lot.
This is something that's emphasized several times, but it doesn't seem to really go anywhere.
Its function in the plot is it explains why human eyes open the Eye of Harmony, which still does not actually make sense.
It would have made sense in previous drafts.
Basically, from what I have read in the original script, there was a lot more emphasis on the half-human thing. Later drafts actually would have cut it, except that for legal reasons, they had to leave a certain amount of the original script in, which is actually something that happens a fair bit because studios pay for scripts.
And this was not, anyway, we're getting too far into production, so back to...
Yeah, but I did want to know about that, because, like, it was a weird thing, and it was something that I always remembered, because they do mention this several times during the movie.
Yes, they do.
And so it was something that I remembered to now from having seen it when it came out in 1995.
Yeah, it is actively a plot.
Yes.
If you want a hardline answer, the best explanation I have heard came from a comic. I cannot remember what it is off the top of my head, but basically in the comic, him saying he was half human was apparently a weird joke that he was playing on the master, where he says that he was using a broken chameleon arch to try and trick the master into thinking he was human.
I don't know what that is, but okay.
Here's the thing. Him being half human would have been important to the TV show going forward.
Oh.
If this backdoor pilot had worked, him being half human was an important plot point to the mythos they were building up.
Okay.
But as for continuity in the actual show, it's a weird plot hiccup that most media tries to retcon out.
Yeah.
Midichlorians.
Interesting. Well, and he kisses Grace twice too. Apparently that's some big hot button thing. But it's like, okay, but we have canon seen the first Doctor be pretty into Kameka in the Aztecs. Like,
yeah,
he doesn't kiss her, but he's like 10 million years old, so I don't need to see that.
This kiss doesn't bother me, but you get to Nuhu and the Doctor's kissing all over the place at the drop of a hat.
Oh, really? Yeah. He's a player, huh? Or she now?
Yeah. Actually, she herself has not really been much of a kisser as of yet, but the male Doctor's a bit of man sluts.
Oh my gosh.
They hook up a lot.
Did not see that coming.
Especially under the Moffat era. Huh. Everyone listening at home, we're ragging on Moffat. Take a shot.
Yeah. But we know both 1 and 8 are at least into chicks. At least.
I personally stand by that each Doctor is a different sexuality. I think the sexuality changes. There are some Doctors who I think are asexual, and there are some Doctors who I think are definitely gay. Definitely.
Well, that makes sense, because if you like different types of tea, you're definitely, you know, taste is taste, right?
I will say they haven't really gotten into it yet, but it's abundantly clear that Yaz, the current Doctor's female companion, definitely has a thing for her. So we'll see.
And this Doctor is significantly less murdery than Hartnell. Like,
oh yeah,
way less murdery. Like at one point he needs to get somewhere and there's a cop in the way blocking them, and instead of threatening the cop, he steals the cop's gun and threatens himself.
I actually really like that though.
Yeah,
I thought it was great. But I also thought this Doctor would definitely not murder someone to death.
If it was Hartnell, that cop would be dead.
He'd be like 10 kinds of dead. Like, he wouldn't have even hesitated. He just would have shot him. This Doctor is not very murdery, but he is kind of steely.
Oh, God,
like, he does sleight of hand and takes stuff from people twice.
Yeah, I like that, too.
Well, I mean, if Captain America can steal two people's cars, then the Doctor can totally steal motorcycles and stuff. Incidentally, if you don't get that reference, check out the 90s Captain America movie. It actually holds up better than I would have expected.
If you like cheesy.
It is cheesy and
but
silly.
But it's fun cheese.
Personally speaking, I like my superheroes cheesy and silly.
Okay, so I gotta know. Okay, so this is the first time Justin and I have seen a regeneration.
Yeah.
Is this normal?
What do you mean by normal? The effects or...
Does he get manic like that? Does he normally lose his memory and wander around confused?
Actually, kind of, yeah.
It varies between each regeneration, but yeah, usually the Doctor is out of it for the regeneration episode, at least.
Okay, so that leads me to my next important question, which is, does anyone at all cosplay naked 8 in a sheet?
No, at least not that I've seen.
Because 8 in a sheet seems kind of iconic to me.
I'm sure someone has, but I haven't ever seen it.
And it covers all, I mean, the sheet covers everything, so it's perfectly decent and everything. I'm just curious because it's like, that seemed like a moment. I don't know.
I would definitely think that there are some people who would be into naked Doctor in a sheet, but who am I to know? We haven't really talked about the Eighth Doctor's personality much. How do you guys compare McGann to Hartnell?
Oh, they're very different. This one is more whimsical.
Yeah.
And friendly.
Yeah, Hartnell is fairly weary. It seemed like there was a lot of times he just seemed done with everything. And this Doctor seemed a bit fresher.
That makes sense to me.
Hartnell Doctor is tired of your shit. And he has a shovel.
He has killed with it before and will again.
We should be very thankful that Hartnell Doctor had Susan around, because Susan was probably the
It's just so much easier. Everybody.
Oh, yeah. Ian would have been out the airlock in the first 2 minutes, let alone 5 minutes.
The later Doctors are a little more tolerant to affectionate towards people.
Yeah, he seems a lot more, and he seems to have sort of a manic energy too, but I don't know if that's just from the regeneration or if that's just what his personality is like, because he does get a little bit more equilibrium back by the end.
Yeah.
The only regeneration I've actually seen aside from this one was the David Tennant one, where he blows up everything around him for some reason.
Yeah.
I have seen that regeneration.
That doesn't usually happen. Mm. The David Tennant regeneration is extremely extra.
Yeah.
I liked his personality, though. He's a lot more gentle and likable and funny and indignant at times. He's very indignant, which is funny, too. I thought you were a doctor. I thought you were a doctor.
I feel like the Eighth Doctor is very much a bridge doctor between Classic Who and New Who. Because a lot of the classic doctors were not quite so, like, they could be quirky, but they weren't quite so whimsical and energetic. Yeah. Whereas later doctors, I feel, get a lot more outwardly heroic and grounded. And this guy, he's definitely heroic in a sense, but I feel like there's still a bit more of that doctor selfishness of, I just kind of want to bum around and see what's out there.
And it's like, we hardly really see that though, because he's dealing with a crisis that he himself caused for most of
the
world, and he's trying to fix it.
I was racking my brain trying to remember what the regeneration wackiness reminded me of. It's kind of just like a more G-friendly version of what happens in DC Comics after you get revived by a Lazarus pit, which is like you literally go nuts for a little bit.
Kinda.
Oh.
When you get brought back to life.
Yeah. Not every doctor goes through quite this extreme of a period of that, but pretty much all of them go through what they call regeneration sickness, which is basically just a period of confusion and possible amnesia just kind of wandering about.
Yeah. That'd be a time when it would be good to have a companion around to keep you from, say, wandering around in nothing but a sheet in a scary basement.
Yeah. Thankfully, most of them usually do, but McGann sadly didn't get that.
He does have companions, though.
He does.
At least one, kind of two.
Well, we should probably move on to the first one who was a definite companion, Grace.
Grace.
Yeah.
Also the love interest. She is smart. She is super good in a crisis. She's funny. I actually liked Grace a fair amount. She's a heart surgeon. She can't save Seven after he's shot a whole bunch of times, partly because he has two hearts and she gets lost in his chest, like surgically lost. And that actually kind of bothered me because this is a thing that can actually happen. Like, bodies can be super weird. You can have all of your organs flipped around, for example. That's a thing that happens. It's called situs inversus. It's actually super common to have extra organs. I don't know if you guys knew this. I didn't until I looked it up. They're called supernumerary organs. And extra spleens, in particular, are so common that they're called accessory spleens. Like, this is my extra spleen. Isn't it cute? And 1 in 10 people have these accessory spleens. So, like, it's weird to have an extra heart, but it's not unheard of. So
I will say, Grace is not the one who did the x-ray. That was some other doctor that then passed it on to her.
Well, it's probably not a doctor. It's probably an x-ray tech.
Well, either way, and given that this is apparently the worst hospital in San Francisco.
It is a terrible hospital.
It's a terrible hospital. I don't blame Grace for this.
But I was just surprised because it's like, I don't know that a real doctor would necessarily assume that it was wrong and that no one could ever possibly have an extra heart. Because there have been guys that have had extra hearts and it's like,
it's more a homage to the first time that the doctor is revealed to have two hearts. He doesn't die in that scenario, but the hospital does kind of freak out about it.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's certainly unusual and worth remarking upon.
Yeah.
But, like, you don't just assume that it's wrong and just, like, keep pushing the stent in there or whatever she was doing. I mean,
they also are limited on time.
Yeah, but
yeah, I think once she realized the mistake, she was trying to turn around and figure out where she had to go.
Right, and then he died.
And her probe got detached. And
yeah, I don't know. I guess things were harder to look up in the 90s. Nowadays, you can just Google it, extra organs, and then get all this information. But
in the, at the time, super futuristic year of 1999.
Yes. I will say that was an actual hospital they filmed in.
Oh, that's cool.
Okay.
Wait, was that creepy basement thing in an actual hospital?
Yes, that was an abandoned limb room.
Okay, it was abandoned. All right. Why are the windows open? Why is there junk all over the place? There's an inch of water on the ground in this hospital.
I mean, there is still a real question of why are they keeping all their stuff in this abandoned lab? Because we see the clothes he's looking through on the people later at a costume party.
Yeah.
So it's terrible.
This is not a good hospital. This is a shitty hospital.
Yeah, if you get sick, don't go there, you know?
Do not go there, no. The sad thing is, because everything's so compact because of time, there's just not much I can say on Grace. She does show up in audios and stories, but I haven't followed a lot of them, so I don't
not
know
that
what...
many.
Really? I thought she showed up for some of the audios.
I actually don't think so, because Big Finish doesn't own the rights to Grace or the kid.
Did she not show up in the Shada remake that they did for audio? Am I misremembering
that? I think so. As far as I know, Big Finish has the rights to the Eighth Doctor, but no one else in the TV movie.
Well, I know she's shown up like a couple of times, probably not that much, but yeah, there's not much material to look through for Grace. And
I liked her. She's smart and she's good in a crisis, so
yeah. And she has the worst ex-boyfriend.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh my god, that guy was a psycho. okay, I understand breaking up with somebody and then taking her stuff and leaving. I get that, but like, what kind of psycho takes the sofa and leaves shoes?
And it was like the same day.
Yes!
He called a truck. They were at the opera together. She leaves.
Oh,
he decides like, I'm so sick of this. She's leaving our dates to go save people. I'm going to move out and I'm going to call the movers right now for a midnight move.
Yeah, that's a thing, right? Is there just like in the San Francisco phone book, just a company called like Revenge Movers or something? Do you want to spite your ex? We will move your stuff at the drop of a hat.
Oh my gosh. That's an amazing business idea, yeah. Though. You got to
we'll also
that
smash
happen.
A window for you on the way out.
That's extra, though.
Leave that a glitter extra. Bomb.
So, yeah, that ex-boyfriend, man, that is terrifying.
That is super...
Dude,
like, you're really sending issues. A message there, buddy. Like,
for a guy who has less than 20 seconds of screen time, he makes a big impression.
No, he doesn't.
He doesn't even say anything.
He just rolls his eyes when she leaves, and then she talks to him on the phone, and you don't hear any of it. But he took the sofa and left his shoes again.
There's so many small details about this strange, mostly off-screen guy that we now know he is a psychopath.
He's the true villain.
I think he is.
She traded up so well.
Oh my gosh. This. Big time.
So good.
So we were going to talk about Chang Li.
Yes. Chang Li, kind of the master's companion in a weird way.
Yeah. A little bit. So he's this Asian kid. He's a teenager who's avoiding being gunned down inexplicably by a gang that's just trying to kill him for no apparent reason.
And that other gang really took it up.
Yeah, I don't know quite what the deal was there, but
they were hiding in boxes waiting for Chang Li and his
friends. Yeah, that's never explained at all. They just totally try to gun down this kid and all of his friends.
And then are never heard from again.
And it's like, okay. He's there and Seven pops out of the TARDIS. And instead of being like, oh my God, why is there a white dude here all of a sudden? Or what's the white dude doing in a box that just magically appeared? They just shoot him.
Yep.
Like a bunch of times.
He pops up in front of a building, the side of which is painted with an advertisement for British tourism or something.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there was like a beefeater guard and stuff like that.
And it said London. Yeah, that was specifically a nod to the show's British roots.
Yeah.
I did not notice that. I was too busy going, oh my God, he just got shot a lot.
I'll also just say that made a lot less sense in the BBC version because they cut almost all the gun violence and only had as little as necessary. So was the surgery was also chopped to hell because they couldn't show that much violence or blood.
Did they just say that he just dropped dead in front of this gang?
Like randomly? They saw like one gunshot and maybe the like it's very cut and choppy, and the whole surgery scene is also very cut and choppy.
The doctor just saw guns and died of a heart attack.
So we don't even really know what the deal is with Chang Li. He seems pretty motivated by money, and there's a gang that wants him dead enough to just blatantly murder him and a whole bunch of other people.
They had a plan. They were waiting in boxes.
But he doesn't seem to be a bad person either. Like, he makes sure the doctor gets on an ambulance, and he goes with him to the hospital in the ambulance.
Yes, he does.
Which is above and beyond what you would do for a stranger normally, I would think.
And he waits in the hospital for him.
Yeah.
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 The cops show up, yeah.
Then he hears the doctor's den. It's like, okay, I'm going to take his stuff and run.
Well, I mean, he's not using it.
Yeah, I mean, he's dead. He did his best.
I don't know what more there is to say about Chang Li, really. He's just... He seems naive, kind of,
because the master tricks him into helping him, but he also seems kind of cynical, so it's like a weird combination.
What there is to say is a lot of his stuff got left in previous versions of the script and on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
He had more backstory and character that got left out.
I will say I like the actor. I think the actor played really well off of everybody and was the right level of funny without being like, you know...
obnoxious.
Yeah.
Does he count as a companion?
He's not listed as one on the TARDIS wiki, but...
Grace is, yes. Okay.
But I do kind of still count him as a companion.
Yeah.
And if so, is he the first person of color to be a companion?
Oof.
Or just the first Asian person?
He's definitely the first Asian. In fact, I'm not sure they've had an Asian companion since him.
Hmm.
You know, he might be the first person of color. I'm not sure. I'm sure that there are some people who are like white, but you know, they'd be like, well, there's like a bit of Pakistani blood in there or something like that.
Or passing, yeah.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'd be willing to say that he is until we find another candidate in this rewatch.
Fair enough. And then there's the other character.
Are we finally talking about the master?
We have to talk about the master, who was played by Eric Roberts. And I don't even know where to start with this guy. Like, because the thing is, we have not seen the master yet. He is totally new to us. And this is the first time we have ever seen this dude, unless Justin maybe has seen him in another serial. But like,
I saw him as an electric Skeletor.
Oh my God. Okay. Oh God. So that's even weirder. And I have never seen the master in any other incarnation, in any other material, except maybe photographs. Like, I've seen the new hot master that they have now.
Sasha Dewan, yeah.
Yeah, he's the hot master. The master is very, very queer coded in this. And he seems not just like a little bit gay. He is like very, very gay for the doctor, and not in a good way, because he's definitely like the shitty abusive ex that
he's obsessed.
Yeah, he does not understand how to take no for an answer. Like, no means no, my dude.
Not the last time we will see the master coded as an abusive ex of the doctor.
Yeah, and he wears this amazing flamboyant set of red and black evil robes, which apparently the doctor just had like sitting in his closet.
Yeah, because he finds it in the TARDIS. So
Eric Roberts specifically wanted to avoid looking, in his own words, effeminate or dressed or acting wise.
Well, he doesn't seem effeminate.
No, he just seems
super gay.
Yeah, they're not synonyms.
Dude. Well, no, but no. The way that Eric Roberts says it, he makes it sound like a synonym.
Well, maybe you shouldn't have put the doctor in this weird fetishy bondage gear torture device thing that is obviously something you were thinking about for a really long time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's not that into you. And even if he was, you didn't even have a discussion about safe words? Like,
No.
This is not okay.
I will say that the official master backstory, because there's a lot of speculation and a lot of changes, but the one that is usually the case is he and the doctor were both students in the same class at Time Lord Academy, being taught by Barusa, who we'll meet later on down the line. And like, the master was a fairly exceptional student, whereas the doctor was more middling, let's say C-level student. They started off as like friends, grew apart. Eventually the master decided he wanted to take over the universe, and now they've got kind of a weird rivalry going on.
They were not just friends. Like, there is a lot more there than...
There are books that officially say that the doctor may have initially had a crush on the master.
I mean, maybe, but it is definitely...
Yeah.
I mean, and the movie starts out with the doctor doing a voiceover telling us that the master has been executed for his crimes on Skaro, which is super weird to us because that's the Dalek homeworld, which A, is now red instead of green, and B, like, I don't get what the Daleks have to do with any of this, but I guess that there's probably some reason for it. And also, did anybody notice this? The Time Lords definitely have capital punishment. Is this why the Doctor is super murdery? Like,
actually,
is their culture just really murdery? Like, is that a thing?
Kind of, but that wasn't the Time Lords who executed him. That was the Daleks. Like, the Daleks put him on trial instead of just, you know, exterminating him.
So they put him on trial because they thought he was enough of an asshole.
Yes, basically.
Daleks thought that.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's its whole own can of worms.
I'm also going to say that probably wasn't the same Skaro that we saw, because by this point in the timeline, that Skaro got blowed up. We're going to see.
Well, I mean, it's red. So unless, like, we've been colorblind the whole time.
Daleks may have a lot of Skaros.
Yeah, if the universe is infinite, there's probably a billion Skaros.
Given that Daleks basically go around, kill everything, and conquer the world that they go on, it would make sense that...
And they aren't that imaginative.
But see, we don't know that about them yet, so... Yeah,
that's true.
It seemed very strange, because it's like, oh, you're killing the Doctor's big enemy for him?
No one really understands why that happened. Also, the Daleks let the Doctor take the Master off-planet without a fight. That seems ferociously out of character. I don't understand why any of that happened.
I don't know why they put it on Skaro in the first place. I don't know, whatever. Maybe they just wanted to hat tip the Daleks because they're so popular or whatever.
They wanted to do more with the Daleks, but they couldn't.
Oh, okay.
Or they were setting it up for the series they were hoping for. No,
they couldn't do more because it cost too much. That small mention of Daleks cost them $20,000.
Wow.
Oh my God.
Terry Nation and his estate is vicious about rights to use the name Daleks. They don't own the rights to the image. They own the name.
Huh. It was really strange. They have the Master in this weird restraint thing that's like a souped up version of Hannibal Lecter's restraints from Silence of the Lambs.
Yeah.
And then he gets zapped into ash. And so he is ash because you see the ash in that shot. And they put him in this fancy box-like urns that the Doctor can bring him back to Gallifrey. And then he turns into snot. Like, for the whole first part of this movie, the Master is literally a slime ball. And someone steps in him at one point and oh my God, you just got Master all over your shoe. And then he becomes a snot snake. Yeah. And then he steals the body of the ambulance attendant played by Eric Roberts and stays that way. So, like, I have to fucking ask here, what the fuck is the Master? I thought he was from Gallifrey, just like the Doctor, and like, he is a snot snake, and he can slime people, and he has corrosive snot, and like, the Doctor does not have corrosive snot, you guys.
That we know of.
Not that I know of, yeah.
The Master is a Time Lord, like the Doctor, but he's gone through some changes over the years.
Are you saying that he's in puberty?
No, I'm saying he's been brought back wrong.
Multiple times.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they mentioned that he used up all his lives.
Yes. Yep. And he used those up, like, that didn't happen just for the movie. He used up all his lives long before the movie.
So he's doing like a Voldemort, like he's coasting on the unicorn blood basically. Type stuff.
When we get to the Master's first canonical appearance in the show in the Third Doctor era, we will be seeing the Master's final incarnation.
Oh, okay.
All Masters after that are Masters that he is Voldemorting.
Okay, so he's already burned through all of his lives.
Yeah.
Yeah, he goes through lives faster than the Doctor.
So is the thing that they have finite lives, is that still a thing?
Now in the show, currently?
Mm-hmm.
Technically, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
But also kind of yes.
That's the kind of vagary that our listeners come for.
That's the kind of vagary that Doctor Who is apparently all about. Yeah. Like,
up until the Timeless Child, the 13 regenerations thing would have been true. Then the Timeless Child happened, and it turns out that Time Lords kind of self-imposed a 13 regeneration limit on themselves.
I mean, that was already kind of a thing, like, before that Rassilon had infinite regenerations. We knew that.
Yeah, but I think we always assume that was just because Rassilon was, like, Time Lord God.
Yeah.
So Rassilon's probably a dick, right?
Oh, man, yes. Massively. A massive dick.
When you say Time Lord God, that just says, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just total dick to me.
You know, when all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail, all that guy has is a shovel, I bet.
And he would have named it the shovel of Rassilon.
It's
the weapon of a Time Lord.
Everything that Rassilon ever used is the something of Rassilon.
Oh, nice. That's actually goals, to be honest.
There are hundreds of artifacts all over Gallifrey, and they are all the something of Rassilon.
That's goals right there.
Okay, so the doctor cannot hypnotize people into doing anything that he wants, then, I'm assuming. Or possess people, or make his eyes glow greeny yellow. Like, this is all unicorn blood shit, right?
Well, the hypnosis actually is kind of a power that the master had. He, like, trained his latent Time Lord psychic powers enough that he could do it, but it's like a Jedi mind trick thing. It doesn't work on everybody. Right. You gotta be a weak-willed person for it to work.
Grace did not seem weak-willed to me.
Well, maybe being dead has given him a bit of a boost.
He didn't actually like hypnotize her. He like partially possessed her.
Yeah.
Oh, that's true.
He possessed her via the spit.
That's true. He hypnotized the kid.
Yeah, for a few seconds.
Yeah, that's fair.
Something that would have made him wanting the doctor's body more evident, they were going to have him decomposing throughout the movie. Part of that remains, he peeled off a fingernail in that one scene.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did wonder about that, and I felt like they were doing that, but then they didn't come back to it.
Eric Roberts didn't like the makeup, so they had to abandon that.
Is rotting too effeminate or something?
Yeah.
Okay, so we have established that this master is extremely gay, especially for the doctor. He's
thinking of Time Lords and the fact that they can change gender via regeneration. I don't think they would have a concept of being gay or not.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you might, but it probably is more like what kind of tea you like this incarnation, right? Yeah. Like, it's not a big deal.
I promise you, Kari, we will come back to the tea. Do not worry, we will get there.
Good, because we have to. I'm just saying that, like, they probably do, but it's not, like, a thing. Like, I doubt it's a thing for him, you know? Like, who cares, right?
Yeah.
You like black tea this time, green tea the next time. Maybe it'll be an oolong. I don't know.
I will also say that in canon, the master definitely got ate by the TARDIS and is, like, floating around in the TARDIS for a very long time.
Yeah, shit. Yeah. He's in the time vortex, and
He may have also periodically been a ghost and a zombie while in there.
And met other versions of himself and other doctors, yeah.
But none of that is canonical, so...
Well, he was canonically a lightning skeleton.
Yeah.
But yeah, we should probably move on. Are there other guest stars we want to mention while we're here?
Not really. There's like an eccentric morgue attendant.
Yeah.
Which was also really kind of a weird moment to me, because it's like, okay, so you put a dead guy into the fridge, and then a totally separate guy comes out of the fridge, and you freak out. And it's like, it never occurs to you that maybe he snuck in there when you weren't around, or like, it's a totally different looking guy than the guy you put in there. Why would you assume it was a dead guy?
Still freaky, especially since he knocks the door off its hinges.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
I mean, there's that. That would freak me out. But like, then when somebody started knocking on the inside, wouldn't you run over there and open the door for it? Like, I don't... Yeah.
Also, no, usually the doctors do not get super strength with regeneration.
Yeah, that was a little strange. There really aren't any other NPCs that are that important.
I mean, they do give little quirks to a lot of different characters. I like the cop that gets stopped and the...
Yeah, and the eccentric scientist at the atomic clock.
They're all very flat characters.
They're
not terribly important.
No.
Okay. Setting, there's not that much to talk about, I think.
The time tunnel looked great, and we saw it during the movie and not just during the credits. Yeah. The TARDIS interior is freaking amazing.
Yeah, that was
pretty
cool.
Much everyone agrees that this is possibly the best TARDIS interior of all time.
I want to live there.
I just want to ask you, too, how much you thought it cost to make that TARDIS set?
$50,000.
No idea. Probably in the tens of thousands.
$1 million.
Oh my god.
It did not look like $1 million.
No.
I don't know what a $1 million set would look like.
I do ask, does that include the Eye of Harmony chamber?
It includes the whole interior.
Okay, so that's two sets.
That makes more sense.
But still, they did not get their money's worth.
Still, you would think $100,000 roughly at most, but no.
Yeah. I mean, it does look like a super great place to live, though. It has like bookshelves and cupboards and like a super cushy chair and a record player, the all important tea service. Like, it's got all this dark wood and dark metal. So it doesn't look like it's like a cavernous hole or anything. It's got kind of a steampunky look to all of the machinery.
It really does. Yeah.
I really love the way that it looked.
I mean, here's the thing. Part of the problem, they made it for potentially a TV show afterwards. So there's a lot of it that we didn't see and a lot of props that were in there that didn't get used.
Man.
That's sad.
That's why, like, there was a lot of it that just got glanced over because it was just filmed for the movie.
But they were hoping that they would get at least a season to explore that place.
Yeah,
that's sad because it's beautiful. It is gorgeous.
Yeah.
I especially love the books. I do like when we get to 12th Doctor, they brought the books back, and I do appreciate that.
Yeah, that's too bad. And it's confirmed that the TARDIS eats people, but it's also confirmed that the TARDIS, well, I'm not sure. I mean, it could be a metaphor, but it seems to be confirmed that the TARDIS is alive. Because at one point he says the TARDIS is dying, and I'm like, yeah, you haven't fed it for 8 lifetimes. What do you think is going to happen? But I suppose it could be dying like your car dies.
The TARDIS is confirmed. It's usually subtle how they confirm it, but we've even seen an episode where it's been kind of confirmed, Edge of Destruction.
Right.
The TARDIS was communicating with them.
Well, and it has indigestion at the end, and it says that the TARDIS likes Chang Li too.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's definitely got a personality, if nothing else.
I think prior to New Who, it's more subtle and just kind of implied. But from the very beginning, the concept seems to be that the TARDIS is sentient to some degree. It is a being unto itself that is capable of self-thought.
Another thing I noticed is at one point the Doctor says it's his TARDIS, and I just thought, no, it's not.
No, it isn't.
Uh-uh. No, it is not.
I think you are lying, sir.
Here's the question I have. Squatter's rights. He's had it for a long time.
Yeah, but he's from a race of immortals, so how does that count?
That's a good question.
The statute of limitations, at the very least, has to be really long.
I think that stealing that, what would it be? Stealing TARDIS, would that be Grand Theft?
Grand Theft Time Machine.
Yeah, Grand Theft TARDIS is actually kind of low on his crimes in Time Lord society, so like it would just be on the list.
I will say he's been captured and put on trial numerous times by the Time Lords. So if they were really upset about it, they could have taken it back.
I'm just saying, I bet that's not your TARDIS, sir. I have seen the First Doctor. I am not believing on that.
Canonically, that is a stolen TARDIS.
Also, yeah. I probably don't care because it is an old model. It's like he didn't steal the Rolls Royce of TARDISes.
He stole the Yugo.
He stole the Honda Civic.
Gotcha. Ooh. There was so much stuff that was confusing in this episode, too. The nice thing is you don't really have to know anything beyond what they tell you. So there is that. But at the same time, you're like, what the fuck is the Eye of Harmony? Why
can
he open it, but he can't open it? Why does it matter if it's open? Why is the world going to end if it's open?
Why do we have a world-ending room in the TARDIS?
Yeah, why do we have a world-ending room? Like, I wouldn't want that room. I'd be like, no, can I have an extra bathroom instead? Like, I want an extra bathroom.
I'm going to say we should not have the Eye of Harmony on the TARDIS. I don't know why it's there. It wasn't originally there, but it has since been there.
The contractor just talked him into it. He didn't need it.
Well, why didn't he get the wet bar option instead? I'm just saying.
The Eye of Harmony is what powers all TARDISes and allows all time travel and is on Gallifrey canonically. Like, that was designed by the two Time Lord gods.
He did steal it, didn't he?
He must have stolen it.
Like, we've seen it on Gallifrey, although now there have been later episodes.
This is the thiefiest doctor of all.
I would buy that he stole it.
Definitely stole that thing.
He stole the core because it's still on the TARDIS in New Who.
Yeah, we see it again.
The one on Gallifrey is a fake.
Yep.
It's supposed to be the discovery that Rassilon and Omega found that basically allowed Time Lord society to exist.
The one on Gallifrey is a fake.
Yeah, how do you fake a captured supernova?
Guys, I need to point this out. Basically, the Doctor stole the Declaration of Independence.
He did.
He's Carmen San Diego.
He is the Nicolas Cage of...
No, it's Carmen Sandiego. It makes perfect sense.
This is much Look bigger than the Look at the way she dresses. Yeah.
Yeah. That's true. She's a Time Lord. She does dress that way.
Yeah. Bigger on the inside technology, too.
She's a Time Lord.
She shrinks the items down. So, yeah, you're right. Carmen Sandiego is a Time Lady.
Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
A combination of the Master and the Doctor.
Devious. Very devious. I think that's about all I had for that. Wait, one more thing. The TARDIS can resurrect dead people?
Oh, yeah, no problem. Every day.
Actually, that is also maybe canonically possible. The explanation that they have there is that the TARDIS travels back in time to before they got killed, which is Superman turns the Earth around levels of not making any goddamn sense.
Doesn't need to make sense.
Like, even by Doctor Who standards, that is some grade A bullshit.
Yeah, that doesn't scan at all.
But we do see in New Who the power of the TARDIS bringing people back.
So the TARDIS may be having resurrection powers.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. So because Grace and...
Ang Lee.
And the kid were on the TARDIS and were kind of companions, does that mean they can speak all languages now?
Hmm. Yeah, probably.
And they specifically said, they made a point that for whatever reason, the TARDIS liked the kid.
Yeah.
The implication seemed to be that the TARDIS liked him because he was human. I prefer to believe that the TARDIS like saw the good inside Chang Li or something like that, because that's...
Oh my God, you guys. No, you're wrong. He likes him like you'd like a hamburger.
Oh yeah, that makes sense.
But the TARDIS definitely wants to eat that kid. That's what that is.
And it got stuck eating the Master, which is like...
I gave it a tummy ache.
Yeah. Well, what even is the Master at this point?
It's a snot snake. I wouldn't want to eat that either. Ugh.
A snot snake in an Eric Roberts wrapper.
Ugh. In an undead Eric Roberts wrapper.
Yeah.
Ugh, that's the worst thing ever. That poor thing. Oh, I'm surprised it didn't puke him back out.
Failed to mention this, but after the Master Snot Snake dove headfirst down Eric Roberts' gullet.
Ugh. That's a sentence. That's a sentence that just got said.
Okay, so now let's talk production. Kari, where do you want us to start?
My biggest question is, given what we know, like this was an attempt to kickstart like the series all over again, and it didn't work. So why didn't it work?
Honestly, from what I looked up, American ratings just were not high enough. Did really well in the UK, but they wanted to make the production largely for an American audience and expand out there. And Americans didn't tune in.
The more major reason was the whole production issues. By the time the movie had finished, BBC, Universal, and Fox were sick of working with each other on the project. There was a lot of bad blood because of all the issues, and the bad ratings were an excuse for most of them to drop out.
Bad blood because of what?
Oh boy, should we start with just the scripts?
Which script?
Oh boy. Okay.
Maybe the place to start is Leakley.
Yeah, let's start with Leakley.
Leakley had a vision.
Well, first say who Leakley is.
Yeah, Leakley ended up not being involved in the movie at all. But he had his own vision for Doctor Who that was kind of based on the BBC show, but not really.
Was Leakley involved in the original pilot?
What do you mean?
The one with the spider Daleks?
Yes, the spider Daleks were Leakley's idea.
Wait. Okay, spider Daleks.
What?
This is a bad idea.
I have images.
I don't want to see.
I kind of do.
I kind of wonder if this same guy knew the producer that Kevin Smith talks about, where he was like, there has to be a scene where Superman fights a giant spider.
Yeah, there has to be a mechanical spider.
Some of them look neat. Some of them look disgusting.
Okay, but why are we talking about mechanical spiders? Who is this guy? Like, is he a producer? Is he a fan? Is he some dude off the street?
He was a Universal studio writer. He was like one of the guys in Universal.
And he helped write the Bible for the show that got thrown out.
Oh, please let me tell what that Bible is.
Sure.
It's basically Superman meets Battlestar Galactica. In that version, the Doctor and the Master are brothers. Barusa, who is their teacher in the show, is now also their grandfather.
Except the Doctor doesn't know that.
Yeah, he's their secret grandfather. He's also Time Lord President.
There's confusion going on.
I don't need to know any of
these. No. So moving on.
So this is basically the guy wrote Snyderverse for Doctor Who.
Kind of. I need to jump ahead though because I didn't get to the best part. Barusa dies and becomes a ghost that is powering the TARDIS and helping the Doctor look for his and the Master's dad on Earth.
So it's the Snyderverse by way of Due South.
I guess I've never seen Due South.
There are two ghost dads. It's a thing.
Anyway, so eventually this guy got sidelined, and then we ended up working with this guy, Philip Siegel, who is the executive producer of the movie. And Siegel is the one who really wanted this to be a continuation from the Seventh Doctor era. He's the one who fought to get McCoy back in, because the BBC wanted to bring in an old Doctor. They wanted it to be Tom Baker, not the Seventh Doctor.
How would
the BBC wanted to eliminate 5 through 7.
The BBC basically wanted to pretend that an entire decade of Doctor Who didn't exist. Because
they wanted to make Bobby come out of the shower and Doctor Who.
Yeah. They wanted to eliminate the entire 80s Who, because they spent that time trying to kill Doctor Who throughout that entire decade, and then decided, well, that's the era that killed the show, so we need to pretend it didn't happen.
When the BBC itself killed the show.
They wanted Bobby to come out of the shower.
Basically, yeah. They wanted to retcon that last season of Roseanne.
Don't we all?
Fair.
I like how we keep tying back to Roseanne.
Yeah, this is just the Roseanne episode, isn't
it? It is the Roseanne episode.
Oh my god. Well, I can't imagine a way to piss off fans more quickly than to just be like, oh, never mind, those last 10 seasons didn't happen.
I really hate how the Seventh Doctor goes down. Well, here's
the thing, Siegel managed to get McCoy in. And they actually wrote a lot for McCoy to do and had him doing stuff. And then the BBC stepped in again and said, fine, you got McCoy. You have the Seventh Doctor. He can't say anything. He can't do anything. Get him out of the movie as quickly as possible.
He, in fact, gets one scene in the movie where he speaks, and it was apparently entirely McCoy's idea, and he justified it because it would fill in a plot hole.
Yeah, when he's dying on the table, basically.
And he pulls off Grace's mask.
Yeah, he speaks several times.
And the BBC wasn't happy about those several times.
What? Why is the... Are these people drunk?
Yeah, it seems like they just don't like Doctor Who that much.
It really does. They don't. And it's so weird because it's their flagship now.
Yeah, but no, at the time, they hated it. They wanted it dead.
Even before, like, why did they hate it so much? Like, it's a silly little sci-fi show for kids. Like,
I mean, we can't really get into that, unfortunately. That's something we'll have to talk about in another episode.
Yeah, that's fair enough, but like...
We'll just say that they had been trying to make an American Doctor Who since 1980, and they just barely got it done in 1996.
I do also want to say, though, that the original version of the script... Did Leakley write the original script for the first movie as well, or...?
He wrote one of them. I don't know which script you're thinking of.
I was thinking of the one with the zombies.
I believe Leakley was still involved in that one, yeah.
Yeah, so originally this was going to take place in New Orleans, not San Francisco, on Halloween, not New Year's Eve, and the plot would involve the Eye of Harmony bringing all of the dead people back to life.
Well, you know, on the bright side, somebody obviously did see these things and go, no.
From what I understand, we should be all thankful for Philip Siegel for making the movie as good as it is.
Yeah, as an executive producer, he did a lot.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Sachs did a fair amount, but yeah, more Siegel.
Jeffrey Sachs did a really good job shooting, though. For a TV movie at the time, it's impressively shot.
Yeah,
it looks very nice.
Very 90s, but it's very nice.
Also, since we're talking about bringing the old Doctor back, there was no
Master.
We
didn't have
Ainley.
I am kind of sad, though, that they at no point asked Ainley to be on set, but I have to assume that's more of the BBC going, like, we're trying to pretend 80s Who didn't happen.
Yeah.
So what did McCoy think of all of this?
McCoy was already, he always wanted to hand off the mantle of the Doctor to the next actor. Because he didn't get that experience when he became the Doctor.
Yeah, Colin Baker got so screwed by the BBC trying to kill the show that when they did renew it, Colin Baker refused to come back.
Because the BBC screwed him so hard.
Yeah.
I feel like they do that a lot.
Yeah. They did.
So McCoy was actually really excited to do it, and he really got into it. As we said, he interjected a lot into the movie to cover plot holes. He got along with everyone on set. He was really excited about how big his dressing room was.
Oh, that's so cute.
That is very charming.
I will say McCoy, even during his era, was kind of known to make like little suggestions and stuff that would get added to the show that are very delightful. He was a circus performer before this.
Yeah, I remember reading somewhere that he was like a vaudeville guy.
He wasn't an actor before he became Doctor Who.
No, this was his first acting performance ever.
Well, not this, but yeah.
Well, not this, but this is his last performance as the Doctor, not counting Big Finish.
He seems like a sweet little man. I don't know.
I like
him. I look forward to seeing him as the Doctor more because he hardly got to do anything in this.
Yes.
He was Radagast the Brown in the Hobbit movies.
So yeah, he was Radagast.
Oh, that's right.
And you know what? I don't like the Hobbit movies.
No, he's actually not bad in them.
Yeah.
He's good in them. Yeah.
He does the role pretty well.
Yeah.
Because,
you know, he has nothing to do with the plot.
Yeah.
I do not understand, though. I know we're not going to talk about this, but I do not understand why, if the BBC hated the show that much, why they didn't just cancel it.
Honestly, from what I've understood, the ratings were too good.
Yeah.
Then hire someone to deal with it who does like it. Duh.
I could see on your face. Why do they hate it so much if the ratings are good?
Well, or just hire someone to deal with it who does like it so that you don't have to.
Yeah.
No, instead they kept John Nathan Turner on, who initially actually liked the show, but kept trying to jump ship every season because he was constantly getting pissed on.
We could do 3 episodes just on...
Yep.
I just think it's bizarre. I just think it's bizarre. And it's been like that since day one.
Pretty much. A big part of what happened in the 80s is the new head of TV drama at BBC just didn't like sci-fi and wanted to kill all sci-fi. But again, ratings were too good. They couldn't reasonably do it.
Okay, so we talked about this a little bit before, but like, if the TARDIS interior costs $1 million, how much did this cost total?
$5 million.
Wow.
For a TV movie.
Yeah.
For a TV movie.
Those are the things I usually do because they're cost effective and cheap, right?
Yep. Well, but again, keep in mind, pretty much everything they were making, they were expecting to use these materials and assets.
I do get it. And especially, it was on Fox, right?
Well,
so Fox in the 90s, that was a pretty good sci-fi destination because you had the X-Files, you had...
Yep. I actually have the breakdown of which company gave what, how much.
Yeah.
Fox gave the most at $2.5 million.
I will also say, because I am a TV nerd, I know this. Fox in the 90s was very much the like scrappy network trying to pick up really pushing shows. Like that's also why Married with Children and The Simpsons got on there because they were at the time very edgy shows.
Groundbreaking.
Also, just because you mentioned X. They were filming in the same area as X-Files in Vancouver.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, a lot of shows film in Vancouver. So,
and most of the people on set were Canadian, not American.
Once Leakley's off the project, I would be very curious to see what Sagal would have done with an American Doctor Who, because there's potential. The Leakley project sounds like it would just be bug nuts.
Well, I mean, it seems like it's a soft reboot, which they eventually got anyway in New Who.
True.
Yeah.
It would have been a 90s soft reboot, which would just, it would speak to my sensibilities a little more than a mid-2000s soft reboot.
Makes sense.
So do we know why they chose the companions that they chose?
You mean the characters?
Yeah, Grace, like what prompted them to choose a woman, a doctor?
I think the woman was, most companions have been women. And I think it's just become kind of assumed that you kind of want a woman in that role somewhere in there.
I wonder what came first, female companion or the desire to have a romance?
Good question.
I don't actually know, because that was actually something that started in Leakley's script. I believe she was a doctor starring in one of Leakley's scripts. So
that I think is actually a cool concept. And I mean, yeah. We do eventually get doctor companions for the doctor, but I can see, like, you know.
We get at least one in Classic Who.
But yeah, it's not uncommon, but I think it's still, it's a good interplay.
I liked it. I didn't mind the romance either.
I did really enjoy the movie.
Do we know anything about Chang Li? Like, why, what prompted them to go like, hey, Chinatown punk, maybe gang member person?
I don't know when they decided to make him Asian, but I know that they had him as a parallel to the, at least initially, to the doctor's own father figure search. They gave him a lot of daddy issues in the stuff that got dropped.
Well, thank goodness.
Yeah. I kind of like it more as a parallel to the idea of giving the master a companion in the same way that the doctor has companions.
Right. It makes them better foils for each other.
Yeah.
That brings me to my next question.
Oh.
Was the master meant to be that gay? Well, I shouldn't say gay, because his gender has swapped and her gender, the doctor's gender, has also swapped. Have they always been into each other like that?
Not really, but by that point, it wasn't entirely unheard of.
There's a fair amount of Fifth Ainley shippers,
and for good reason. Like, Ainley definitely played into that.
So this has definitely not been the first time that's come
no
up.
I okay. will say, though, it gets even more explicit from here.
Not that explicit.
I'm not sure it can get any more explicit unless they're snogging each other on this.
Got it in one.
The I want your body is very direct.
Well, he's not yet straddling him while the doctor is tied to a bed.
Oh my god. Well, he is the worst ex. I'm
Nor
sorry.
Is he pulling the doctor into kiss.
I mean, also, the Leakley thing is not the first time that the production crew has tried to push them being brothers. That's something that they've tried to push a lot.
That actually goes back to the first master. I don't like it. It's not canon. Most versions do not accept it.
And that would be horrifying, especially with the Hoye vibe. That's not... No.
That seems like the sort of thing that they would toss out, you know, all no homo.
Yeah.
The bros, man. The bros.
They are literal bros.
The relationship between the initial master and the doctor has not been matched until kind of now with the current master-doctor relationship.
I would agree. Like Delgado and Pertwee, they didn't really play it like ex-lovers. They played it much more as like
Holmes and Moriarty.
Yeah.
Have they done an incarnation of the master for every regeneration? Yeah. Or has that regeneration fought the master?
No.
Master didn't show up until the third doctor.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. I did not know that.
Yeah. How about after that?
Nine has never met with the master, at least not in the show.
Right.
I think 11 didn't meet with the master.
Hmm. Okay.
All of the ones in between, though, did at some point.
Yeah.
The
just barely with McCoy, though.
He shows up in McCoy's last serial.
But as I recall, one of the conceits of New Who is that the Doctor is the last Time Lord.
For a couple series, yeah.
You know how Superman is the last son of Krypton?
I get how
being the last of something works. That you're not, and you know, just in terms of story, but the conceit was built around the idea that he was the last survivor.
We do not have time for that. That is a whole thing.
Yeah. What was the fan response to this?
To the movie in general?
Yeah.
As Zach has said, in the UK, it was largely well received by audiences. Fans, though, have the half-human thing and the kiss have definitely split fans.
Well, okay. All right. Why would the kiss bother them? He was definitely into Kameka. Like,
most fans didn't grow up with that.
To be fair, that episode didn't exist. Even in the 90s, it was hard to get because, you know, the BBC destroyed all the tapes.
Well, I declare all of those fans not real Doctor Who fans. And I think we should gatekeep them, like, a lot.
Also, some people do have issues with the Eye of Harmony. And
that I actually
all the plot holes.
I mean, the plot holes, it's Doctor Who. But I do have issues with the Eye of Harmony being on the TARDIS. Like, How does one even carry that onto their TARDIS?
Also, they have issues with an American master.
Oh, wait, no. I figured out how one gets the Eye of Harmony onto a TARDIS. We call revenge movers.
That is 100% how that works.
They would be 100% on top of that.
Also, the master's not American. The master is a snot monster inhabiting an American body.
Yeah.
Also, again, even though Eric Roberts is, from everything I have read, a massive bastard, I do kind of like his performance. And by this point, the master has been camp before.
So fans, not fans.
I would say it's less not fans and more a Kirk Picard situation. You can definitely get a fight going by screaming the Doctor's half human at a Doctor Who convention.
Oh my gosh, now I really want to write that down,
I want to remember that, just in case.
And definitely get a fight going.
Never know.
There is one thing I do want to make sure we touch upon. Zach, do you have highlights of casting choices for the Doctor and the Master, and maybe also directors they were considering?
Some people, Jim Carrey for the Doctor.
For the Doctor?
Yeah, that was my reaction. Like, for the Master, I get, but for the
Doctor. Yeah, I could see that.
Tim Curry.
For the Doctor?
Yeah.
I could see that. Here's the thing.
I actually think
Tim Curry would have been a very interesting Doctor. He would have been a fantastic Master. But he went off to make Muppet Treasure Island, which I think we can all agree is a highlight of his career. Yeah. So that was fair.
Yeah.
But I could see that.
I don't want to live in the world without Muppet Treasure Island.
Anthony Stewart Head.
He would have actually been a really
good one. That would work.
Yeah.
And then two that I'm just including because they did end up being the Doctor, Christopher Eccleston and Peter Capaldi.
Huh.
Now on to the Master. The original candidate was Christopher Lloyd.
I do not like that pick.
No.
I don't like that.
I think it would have worked.
I
mean,
I get he was Judge Doom, but I feel like Judge Doom is menacing and terrifying in ways that the Master generally isn't. I don't know. Doesn't work for me.
Yeah, I was more thinking evil Doc.
I don't see that. I've seen him do a lot of different stuff. Like, he was actually a really good villain in Star Trek 3.
True. He was.
He was.
But I can't see him in that role.
No.
I can.
Who else was up?
The Master? Yeah. Well, I have a lot of names for this bit. Scott Bakula.
No.
Yeah.
No.
That would have been bad.
Robert Englund.
Yeah. Okay. I could definitely say.
Interesting.
Malcolm McDowell.
Definitely.
Would have been fantastic.
Oh, God, yeah.
Definitely.
That would have been great. I'm really sad we didn't get that.
David Bowie.
Oh, come on.
He would never do it.
You know, that's obviously a pie in the sky casting.
But he would never do that.
I think the only reason they didn't bother to bring the Doctor to David Bowie is because they could not afford David Bowie for a whole show.
Yeah.
No.
And then Jonathan Frakes.
Who would have been great. I remember Zing House.
He can ham it up.
Yeah.
And Patrick
Stewart.
He's
a consummate professional, and he does a very good job as a bad guy. And Patrick Stewart is a great bad guy, too.
Oh, and other directors before Jeffrey Sachs. I'll just do one of them. Ridley Scott.
To which Ridley Scott, I assume, flashed his Oscars at them and were like, are you serious? I think Joe Dante was also up for it.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Which would have been interesting.
At the very least.
What else did he do?
Gremlins.
And Gremlins 2.
That could have worked.
Also, 1 point for the BBC and their massive amounts of complaints. They did not like the Goo Master.
I mean, they're not wrong.
They're not wrong about.
But they complained too late, and the CG had already been done. I did want to bring up one question. The sonic screwdriver, the reason that it didn't look real in the movie is because they had to edit it in post because McCoy held it the wrong way because he had never used it before.
Yeah, by the time McCoy showed up, the writers had actually gotten rid of the sonic screwdriver.
Because it was used as an easy out too much.
Yeah.
Which is true from what I've heard.
Just because you guys caught it, I wanted to bring that up.
Okay. So, Zach, you may or may not involve yourself in any of this, but I want to talk tea. So I did a deep dive on all the different teas that the Doctors have said they have preferred over the years.
And there's a lot.
The Seventh Doctor has 3 go-to teas, and they are all black teas, which is why I think it's black.
No,
and
not blue. We don't know if one of them is black.
Well, two of them are black.
I can probably, I might be able to tell you. Tell me.
Oh, no, you, well, the two are Lapsang Soochong and Earl Grey.
Okay, that is very unpalatable, in my opinion. Yeah. Lapsang Soochong tastes like a campfire, basically.
The third type of tea that he describes as his favorite is Arcturan, which comes from the planet Arcturus, and as such, does not exist.
Yeah. Alien tea.
Yes. Alien tea.
Made by heads with tentacles.
Yes.
It's probably strong if he likes Lapsang Soochong.
I mean, he does add milk, as we know. That is what my research has shown me. He does not like peppermint tea. He prefers his tea.
But he would drink it if you gifted it to him. He is polite like that.
Yes. I don't think we have time, though, for the deep dive of the tea question.
We'll do a separate tea cast.
We'll do a tea cast.
Yeah, and now that I know that that's Lapsang Soochong.
Actually, based on my research, I think it's Earl Grey that's in that particular cup.
I'm not a big fan of Earl Grey either.
Real quick, before we go, final scores out of 4 Daleks. How would each of you rank this movie?
4. I liked it.
I would say solid 3.
Solid 3? I'd say 2.5, maybe 3. Depends what mood I'm in. Look, if they had given 7 a more dignified death at the beginning, I would probably be a lot nicer.
My main issue with it is that I think there's too much.
It does rush a lot.
I think it needed a chance to sit and breathe a couple of times.
Yeah.
I'll give 4 Daleks and toss Paul McGann's wig in there as well.
Good wig.
Okay. So I think we average out to about 3, maybe 3.5 Daleks for the group. Okay. So that has been our thoughts on Doctor Who, The Enemy Within. I don't know what the enemy is within, but there we are.
It's a snot monster.
Yeah.
All right. Remember, like, subscribe, check us out on Buzzsprout, follow us on Facebook and Twitter, do all of that stuff. Check the more information section and join us next time where we take our first steps into modern Who proper with Christopher Eccleston's first episode, Rose. And we'll see you there.
And don't eat any snot monsters.
No. Remember, feed your TARDIS and don't feed them snot monsters.
Well, I thought you were a doctor.
I thought you were a doctor.